Won't you please join me in welcoming Jason Jay from Portland, Oregon.
Oh man, my name's Jason Johnson, alcoholic. I'm not even going to touch that thing. I'm not judging, I'm just coming pretty damn close though, right? My sobriety is 11:30:07. I'm an alcoholic. Man, welcome to everybody who's new. You're wanted, welcome, and needed in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Congratulations on the large milestones in the years. Look, I might get on a tangent. I might not get sober. I might just go sideways. I don't know. But if you're new here, and you only hear this, you need to know that Alcoholics Anonymous works, and God is real, right? All that other stuff, you can just figure it out on your own, and good luck. You know what I mean? I have a sponsor, his name's Carl Morris, he's out of Cabina, California. If you know him, look, I mean, he sponsors a lot of guys, and I'm considered, for Christ's sake, Jason, right? So that's what it is. I mean, there's Marco Marty, there's Revolving Door Gordon, there's Beautiful Mike, and then there's, for Christ's sake, Jason. So that's probably telling you exactly where we're at in the situation. My home group is called Sandy's Kitchen. Well, I think they changed the name, right? That was the name of it. Tuesday Night Live, right? We started in during COVID in Portland, Oregon. We started in Sandy's Kitchen. And then we moved to the garage, and they did a group conference, and they moved it to a church, right? I voted against it. I'm the only one, because I'd rather eat lasagna and be selfish and self-centered than help people. So that's another bad sign, right? And so they moved it to that church. But it's in Portland, Oregon. If you're ever in the Clackamas area, Portland area, on a Tuesday night, or heck, if you're ever in the Portland area ever, give a hold of me. If you want to go to Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'll meet you there, or I'll find somebody to meet you to Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Man, everything I have in my life is of value and good as a result of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to thank Lee for inviting me up here again. I think I was here like 7 years ago, so I must not have done too well. We'll try. We're starting all over now, right? You know, let's just do this thing. You know, my mom and dad got divorced when I was really young. My mom, I used to say she was an old hippie, but she was a young, right? She wasn't old, she was like 22. The reason I know she was a hippie, she smelled like a hippie, right? That patchouli oil smell, whatever that, you know that, yeah, that's what she smelled like, right? And we lived up in the woods with a bunch of other people that smelled the same way. And sometimes we lived in a school bus before it was popular. One time we lived in a teepee, sometimes we lived in a log cabin. We lived up in the woods, and what I found out later is my mom grew pot for a living. Right, so we lived up in the woods, and that's what she did. And you know, I didn't think there was anything wrong with that. As a little kid, it was kind of cool to live in the woods. The only problem was that during the day, everybody got along, and then at night, they start drinking, right? And I'd see my mom get beat up on a regular basis, right? And as a little kid, I didn't know there was anything wrong with that, because the next morning, I'd see my mom hugging and telling that guy she loved him, right? So what that did for me is it taught me how to, it didn't make me an alcoholic, but it just gave me some skills in life, right? When you feel that tension and that vibe, I learned either how to de-escalate or hide, right? And I took that all the way through life, right? And again, I didn't know there was anything wrong with that. You know, when I started to go to school in kindergarten, my mom moved to town. And when we moved to town, my mom lived at a house that was I guess it was a party house, like it would be nowadays, right? When you're 23, 24 years old. You know, and what it was is that 3 o'clock in the morning, there might be 20, 30 people in that house. Or 3 o'clock in the morning, I might be the only kid in the house, right? And as a little kid, I didn't know there was any Leave It to Beaver. I didn't know people sat down at the table and ate dinner. I didn't know people took baths. I just learned how to survive on my own, right? When it got dark out, I pulled down all the blinds, turned on all the lights, and turned the TV up really loud, right? That way, if somebody came to rob us, they think there's a party going on, they go kill the neighbor, not me. And it seemed to be working for me. I made it to 6. And, here's what happened. You know, I was getting ready to go into the first grade, and my life changed dramatically. I was at home on a Sunday night, and I was watching Happy Days. There's some people, thank you for raising your hand, right? I was at a young people thing, and they're Googling what the hell's Happy Days, and they laugh like 5 minutes later, right? I was at home on Sunday night, I was watching Happy Days, right? And minding my own business, and the phone starts ringing, and it's not like today where it goes to voicemail, or it tells you who's calling. It rings until that person gives up, right? Or you answer, right? And it rang all the way to the commercial, right? And I'm thinking, for God's sake, it must be important. I answer the phone, it's my grandma. Right? I don't know if there's any grandmas in here, there's some Al-Anons, but man, grandmas are like, they want to know everything, right? Have you got your clothes laid out? Are you excited to go to school? Have you taken a bath? Have you eaten dinner? Did you wear your new shoes yet? I mean, just questions that have absolutely nothing to do with the little kids. But I'm saying yes, 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 yes. And finally I told Grandma, I gotta go, my show's back on. She said, sweetie, let me talk to your mom. I said, oh, she's not here, she's at the tavern. The phone number is 282-4440. If you call there, a guy named Floyd's gonna answer the phone, ask for Darla. It's gonna take a few minutes and she's gonna come and tell you she's got one more picture here and she'll be home. And there was like a long pause, right? And I was like, man, I gotta go. She said, sweetie, give me that number again. And I gave it to her. And she said, when your show's over, I want you to go to bed. When you have to go to school in the morning, I want you to listen to what the teacher says and be nice to the other kids. I'm like, great. Didn't think you got this phone. So I hang up the phone and now I'm watching Laverne and Shirley. Yeah. Yeah. Finally. Yeah. Now they're coming around, right? I'm watching Laverne and Shirley. I'm minding my own business and there's a knock on the door, right? And I pause. Then they start banging on it, so I have to crawl over to the TV to turn it down, and then I have to sneak underneath the coffee table because I know I'm going to die. Right? And then they start knocking on the window or beating on the window, and I thought, man, I'm dead. Right? All of a sudden I hear this Jason open the door. It's Grandma. And I didn't look like hitting the body. So I was like, man, all right. And I went up and opened up that door. My grandma's standing there. She didn't look like my grandma. Right? She looked like she'd been crying. She kind of looked mad. She wasn't in her zone. Right? And she looked at me. She said, sweetie, get your stuff. You're coming to live in my house. That's like hitting the lottery, right? You go to Grandma's house, there's Rice Krispie treats, there's homemade cookies, there's homemade popsicles, there's sheets on the bed, the sheets match the pillowcases. But most importantly, there's somebody there all the time. That's an easy sell for a little kid. I'm like, right on, let's go. Grab my little bit of stuff, and I get in her car, and we drive to her house. I'm running up the stairs, I'm cut through the front room, head to the kitchen, I get this, hey! I turn around, it's my grandpa. He's like, what are you doing here? I was like, man, I live here now. I didn't know my grandma didn't learn it by him, right? Found out later, she didn't say, hey, I'm going to get Jason. He's going to come live with us forever, right? But what he did is he looked right at me and said, yeah, you do, buddy, come here. And he gave me a hug, and I fell asleep on that man's lap every single night for the next 4 or 5 years because he made me feel safe, right? And I wasn't an easy kid, right? I'm that kind of kid that, man, my grandma would drop me off at Sunday school and say, he has an enthusiasm for life, and then she would take off, right? And my grandpa, he dropped me off somewhere and said he's either in trouble or trying to talk his way out of trouble. Right? That's all he, there's the only thing he's going to be doing. If you have any problems, call his grandma. So, look, and look, I don't know, this looks like a pretty normal crowd, but as a little kid, I never wanted to be a doctor or a police officer or a fireman. I always wanted to be a bank robber. Right? And I remember a career day, like in the third grade, and everybody's going to dress up to whatever they're going to be, and the teacher asked me, what are you going to be? I said, a bank robber. She was not impressed, so I became a rodeo clown, but that's a whole other story, right? So, I remember sitting under this apple tree, and this is just a typical day with my family, right? I remember I was probably in the third grade, I was sitting out underneath the apple tree, this kid Stevie, and he says, what are you going to be when you grow up? I said, I'm going to be a bank robber. And he said, well, there's no bank to rob on our block. I said, I know. He said, but there's a Kool-Aid stand. I'm like, wow, that's a great idea, right? So I went and got me a bandana, a BB gun, a cowboy hat, and I rode my bike up to the Kool-Aid stand, and I robbed it. And just didn't go well, right? All they had was Kool-Aid. They had no money, right? They just opened, and I pulled my mask down, so my name is Jason Johnson, don't forget it, you know, because I saw Jesse James do that, right? And so I did what the best... The next move would be I took a kid hostage, right? And I took him home and I tied him up to my clothesline pole, right, in the backyard. And I told everybody to go get the piggy bank and bring me back the money. And look, it worked on TV, right? And so everything was going good until my grandma yelled dinner, right? At 5 o'clock, she yells dinner. If you don't go in to eat, you don't eat. So I'm looking at this poor kid outside of the clothesline pole and said, man, I got to go. I'll be back like in 20 minutes. I have to eat dinner. I don't get to eat. So I put my bandana, my BB gun, and everything by him, and I went in to eat. You know, everything was going fine until the police officer arrived. And then it went south. Because when the police arrived in my neighborhood, everybody shows up, right? So everybody's in my backyard. They're not the type, really too tight because she's been squirming. It's just not going really good. And my grandpa starts laughing really loud, right? Which really set my grandma off, right? She's like, what's so funny? He's like, man, you can't make this up, right? And so that set my grandma over the top. And she says, get in that house, you're grounded for a month. So now I'm crying, right? That's a little extreme, I think. And all of a sudden, my grandpa said, hold on a second. And he took my grandma behind the house, because you don't argue in public, I guess, back then. He comes back out and says, look, I didn't tie that young man up in the clothesline. There's no need punishing me, grounding you to the house for a whole month. You're grounded to the block. right? I was like, sweet, he became my hero, right? He taught me right away that if you, he taught just to share in a general way. He taught me that, you know what, if you're going to do the crime, you have to do the time, you know, all that kind of stuff. But what happened is I got older, that man became a problem, right? Because he was a good person. And what I found out is that if you dropped a quarter on the ground, he'd spend a dollar to get it back to you if he knew it was yours, right? And as I got older, he became a nuisance, right? He was always out to get me, trying to turn me into the cops, telling them where I worked, where I lived, all that kind of stuff. So I grew away from him. My grandma, on the other hand, man, I just thought she felt sorry for me. Right? I don't know if anybody has any grandsons or nephews or nieces or kids, anything like that. You know, I was that kind of kid that if I had a baseball game, everybody came because my grandma made them. If somebody went on vacation, they had to take Jason because my grandma made them. And I just thought that's the way it was, right? But I remember being in the sixth grade. I just got into middle school. And, man, I got kicked off. Imagine that. I got kicked off the school bus for a month, right? That's a whole other story, right? But it was my first day of walking home, and I'm walking out. My grandma's walking into school, and I'm like, man, she came to rescue me again. And she said, no, sweetie, we need to go in this office and talk to some people. And I said, okay. We went in this office, and there's a round table, and there's like a teacher, a counselor, a special needs teacher, a lady from a different school, a principal, and a couple of other people. And they're all like on this side of the thing, and then there's two chairs where my grandma and I sat. And they proceeded to tell my grandma everything I'd done in the last 3 months, right? That I had no self-control, that I stole stuff, that I hit people, that I talked all the time, that I lied. I mean, I remember the one lady going, he can't read or write at this level, right? And I remember thinking, they got me, right? And I remember just sitting there, my grandma's not saying anything, and I'm just like, wish my grandpa was here. He at least told me what to do. And when they got done talking, my grandma said, may I say something? And they said, yeah. She said, look, I'm not going to deny Jason did any of those things. He lives at our house. Right? But he's a good kid and there's a good person inside of him. The reason I know this is every morning he runs down to Mrs. Harrington's house on the way to school. He throws a newspaper up on the front porch so she doesn't have to walk down the stairs. And the young man's saying he's simple-minded. Every time I see him at church on Sunday or the grocery store, the first thing he asks is, where's Jason? Because nobody picks on him when Jason's around. And Jason always picks him first for sports. Nobody told him to do those things. He just did those. So there's a good person inside of him. I think it's our responsibility as adults to tap into that. You know, and I ended up having my best year at school. But I remember for the first time walking out of that class and walking out that hallway and looking at my grandma and realizing somebody loved me no matter what, right? And that lady became my best friend. Anywhere she went, I went. Anything she did, I did. Because that was the only person that saw me. And, you know, and I'd like to say my life got really good and I became a president of the United States, but it didn't. That young man I tied up to the clothesline pole, Sean, became one of my best friends. Because I took him off, right? That's kind of like Al-Anon in a way, right? And we went over to this buddy, it was the fifth grade, it was summer, and we're going to sleep in Lake's backyard. And we went over to Lake's house, and we're setting up our stuff in the backyard, and Lake's mom comes out and says, hey, there's $10 on the counter, we ordered you guys a pizza. When the pizza guy gets here, pay him the pizza money and stay in the house. We're all going to go, all the adults are going bowling. Well, like, that's like hitting a lottery too, right? So they left, the pizza came, and we paid the guy, he left, and my friend says, man, pizza tastes better with beer. I'd never drank beer, but I said, yes, it does. And he went downstairs and he brought up this case of Lucky Locker beer. Look, I didn't, these people say they drank it. I'm like, man, I had to plug my nose and hang in there. Right? It was nasty. And, my life kind of started having a little bit better time, right? And we're out in the backyard, and the next thing I know, man, I got food poisoning. I got sicker than a dog about 3 hours after the drinking thing, right? I looked at these guys and said, man, I'm going to go home. I don't feel good. I'm like, whatever. So I guess I rode my bike home drunk for my first DUI or whatever you want to call it. But I made her home, and I get home, and I walk in the front door, and I tell my grandma I don't feel good, and I go to my bed, and I'm sick all night. And that lady didn't come check on me. She didn't do her job, right? And, I'm sick like I hadn't been sick ever that I think of. And the next morning, I finally fall asleep. The next morning, I wake up. My grandpa's stepping into my bed. He's like, get up. You got to go to work. I told him I don't feel good. He said, get up. You got to go to work. I said, I'm in the sixth grade. I don't have a job. He said, if you're going to drink like a big boy, you're going to work like a big boy. Now, let's go. Well, I thought my grandma would help me out, but she didn't. She handed me a warm egg salad sandwich and a thermos of warm milk and told me I had a great day. And we went and picked up Lathan Sean, who was just as bad as I did, and we had to go pick strawberries. Right? And if it is a law for minors to pick strawberries in the state of Oregon, thank you. I helped pass that law. Right? Because it was brutal. I picked strawberries, I got sick. I picked strawberries, I got sick. I picked strawberries, I got sick. I remember looking at my grandpa sitting on the back of his trunk drinking his coffee and just laughing. And I looked at my buddies and I said, man, I'm not drinking anymore. And they said, you don't like the alcohol? said, I don't mind alcohol, I just don't want to work. So I quit cold turkey. No AA, no 12 steps, no treatment, no church, no nothing. I just stopped. And I did pretty good until I got to high school. And what happened is because of such about the Alcoholics Anonymous, I learned this is when the obsession challenge kicked in for me. Because what I noticed today is that I was good at sports. I played sports on during the week. And on the weekends, I drank. And what I do on the weekdays, I save my lunch money on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, pitch it in with another guy's shoulder tap. And that's what we did. We drank on the weekends. Nobody was dying of a heroin overdose. Nobody was going to jail. We just had fun. Right? And that's how I got through high school. You know, on March 1st, 1989. Carl says I need to tell you the truth. That's why I have to study. It's easier to tell a lie. I stole a motorcycle. Right? I used to say I borrowed it. Right? Sounded better. I stole the motorcycle and I got in a high speed chase and I crashed and I woke up in an ICU in a hospital with a sliding glass door not knowing what happened. So I start screaming, the nurse comes in, I said, I'm trying to ask her what happened. She said, you're in a drunk driving accident. And I said, okay. She said, you're on a motorcycle. I told her I don't own a motorcycle. She said, we know. And I asked her, am I going to die? She said, you're not going to die, but you're probably going to lose your left leg. And if you don't lose your left leg, you'll never walk normal again. And I remember thinking to myself, I'll never drink or use ever again, right? And I was in that hospital for a few weeks, and when I got out of that hospital, I told myself, I'll never drink, I'll never drink, I'll never drink. But that anxiety and that fear and that head kept spinning, and the only thing that would stop was alcohol, right? And I started drinking, I started putting, and I just lowered my standards to keep up with my quality of life. So that I'm living in a house that's somebody's uncle's house until the police come, and then nobody knows whose house it is, right? It's one of those ones that has no power, no water. But you think you're doing really well. And that's one of those houses, you know, and I was just getting by, right? But about once a month or about every two or three weeks, one of my uncles would show up at my, wherever I was staying, and they'd make me drag me down to the payphone and say, you need to call your grandma. But why did I gotta call grandma? They said, because she called all your friends, all the hospitals, all the institutions, and then she starts calling us every single morning. Has anybody seen Jason? Anybody know where Jason is? Is Jason alive? Can somebody please go find Jason? So you need to call her and tell her you're alive, so she'll quit calling us. So I put a dime in that payphone and I call my grandma and I tell her, grandma, I'm doing really good. I'm working out of town. I have a great job. And I'll come see you when I get back. You know, and because my thinking is when I put alcohol, it justifies everything, right? If I don't see you in person, I'm not lying to you or stealing from you, so I'm doing you a favor. That's my kind of thinking, right? And I would just do that over and over. And you know, when I would get off the phone, I had all the intentions to go see my grandma, but I'm an alcoholic and I'm powerful over alcohol. Right? So I drink, I just wouldn't show up. And that went on and on and on and on for the next 5, 6, 7 years, right? On December 3rd, 1997, my uncle Leroy showed up at my tent. I had got kicked out of the house that had no power, no water, and I was living in the backyard. And he comes to my tent and he tells me that my grandma had been in the ICU for about a week. They took her off of life support. Maybe you should come say goodbye. I said, I don't want to go. He said, they didn't ask you if you want to go. And he's a big biker guy, so I went. And we got in his truck, and he handed me a pint of vodka and told me to drink it. Right? And I remember drinking that vodka, and you know what he did? It made it okay. Right? And I remember getting in that hospital, getting off that elevator. And when you come off the elevator at this place, I have a big family like that size. So they're all sitting on one side of the room, and only two or three people can go into the room at a time. I just went to this side of the room. Right? I didn't look up, because I don't need anybody to tell me I'm a piece of shit, and I'm not going to mouth nothing. I'm okay with that. I know that's me, right? And that's why, that's the deck I was dealt from a little kid, and I'm okay with that. So I went over there and I sat by myself, and my mom didn't even come over and talk to me. You know, and finally my aunt came over and she said, you know what, you need to get in there, say goodbye, and get out of here. And I said, okay, and I went in there, my Uncle Gary was standing there, my Uncle John, and my Uncle Gary said, what do? He said, just talk to her like she's here. Grab her hand and just talk to her like she's here. She hasn't had her eyes open all day, but she can hear you. Right? And I said, okay. So I sat down, I grabbed my grandma's hand, I started talking to her, and she opened her eyes. And then she started talking back to me, and I panicked. Right? Because everybody started running to the room to talk to her. And I did what I know how to do, and said the thing. I just told grandma, I have a great job, I'm working out of town. There's a lot of people here that would like to see you. I think I'll come back tomorrow and I can visit you. Is that okay? And she said, yeah. And she told me she was going to pray for me, and that she loved me, and I told her I loved her. And I remember walking out of there, and she said, told my uncle, he's a good kid. He's going to do something with his life. You just watch. And I just remember thinking, why didn't that lady just give up? Why didn't she just give up, man? I'm a piece of crap. I went back to my tent, and I did what you do, right? And a couple days later, my Uncle Dale showed up, and, you know, my grandma had passed. and that he would come pick me up and I could sit with his family at the memorial. And I said, okay, so maybe you could shower. And I said, I'll try. And the next morning when he came to pick me up, I hid in the closet in an abandoned house with a bottle of Ghost Water and some Jägermeister, and I didn't come out. Right? Because I was too embarrassed and too scared and too ashamed. And I could hear them saying, you're going to regret this for the rest of your life. But alcohol makes that okay. Right? And I just didn't get out. And, you know, the next probably 2 weeks were miserable. Right? I just didn't know what to do. And my life took a drastic change again. It was a Sunday. Sundays are not good for me, obviously. I used to tell people I called my uncle because I wanted to see what he was doing. I called my uncle Collect because nobody had said my name in about a week, and I just wanted to know if somebody would say my name. I called him on a Sunday morning, and I asked him if he was going to go to church. He said, yeah. They said, I'll meet you there. He said, yeah. Look, my uncle, we grew up in the same house. He's 7 years older than me. We're brothers. To this day, we're brothers. He's got 26 years in sobriety. But we grew up in the same house. I knew he was going to beat me up. I just didn't think he'd beat me up in church, right? I was hoping anyway. And we get to this church, and I'm sitting down here because I haven't showered in about a week or two. His family's at this end, and man, they started singing this song, How Great Thou Art, right? Something like that. And I kind of got caught up in the moment, right? My eyes started watering. And then they sang that damn song, Amazing Grace. And I looked at my uncle and said, man, I think I have a drinking problem. He said, you think? And the whole church went quiet, right? My aunt said the song was over. She came to hear me talk, right? And I said, I might have a drug problem. People make you feel better about yourself. This is what he told me. He said, come over to my house. We'll wash your clothes. We'll feed you. We'll give you $20 and you can figure out how to deal with your life. I said, great. I go to his house, take a shower. When I'm coming out, there's a phone book on the counter. He says, hey, you're going to go to treatment. If you don't know what a phone book is, look it up. You don't need a phone book to look it up anymore. But he said, you need to call treatment centers. I said, what's a treatment center? He says, you're going to treatment for drugs and alcohol. I said, well, I don't know any treatment centers. He goes, look it up. Call hospitals, right? So I opened it up, and the first hospital there was called Portland Adventist. So I called it. I didn't think anybody would be open on a Sunday, but they were. And I told this lady, my uncle thinks I have a drinking and drug problem. She got all excited. She passed me over to another lady. I told this lady, my uncle thinks I have a drug problem and a drinking problem, because I tried to switch it up a little bit, and she got really excited. And she told me, can you be here tomorrow morning at our clinic at 9 a.m.? I said, yes. She goes, we'll do an assessment, and if we can get you in treatment, we will. If not, we'll find something to help you. I said, great. I got off the phone, I told my uncle, hey, I got an assessment in the morning, give you $20, I'll tell you how it went. He said, no, you're staying the night here. Whoa, that was nowhere in my plan, right? I had to sleep, he says it's leather, it's a plastic couch, right? And he has this damn dog that licked me all night, right? So I'm on this plastic couch, I'm sweating from the inside out, because I haven't had anything in my body. My body aches, this damn dog licking me all night. It's just miserable, right? And I get up the next morning and goes, man, he was crap, you need to take a shower. And he was too, if you slept on a plastic couch. But I didn't say anything. He said, sure. I took a shower. When I got out of the shower, he went to take a shower. And when he got to the end of the shower, I remembered he had a liquor cabinet. Right? And I went to the liquor cabinet. I already felt great, right? I went to the liquor cabinet, found some Bacardi 151, poured it in a Coke can. I started drinking it. We get in his truck. We're driving to the treatment center. He goes, man, I smell alcohol. I said, it's not me. I'm going to treatment, for God's sake. Now I know that's just a yes, right? Every time I think somebody's in treatment, I wanted to blast everything on the cup, right? Soup, all 15, fail all 15. And now I'm worried about booze. Right, we get to the treatment center, I made a big error. I went to go hide my pop can in the bathroom underneath the garbage bag. He went in there, he said yes to a couple of things. I got checked into treatment just like that. And man, that was December 29th, 1997. And I'm going to tell you right now, Adventist is different. They have no caffeine, they have no sugar, and they have no women. Yeah. That's a big deal for a homeless guy. And, man, and I didn't know you could just leave treatment. I thought you had to escape, right? So, I'm watching the elevator, timing the elevator going up and down. I'm watching the exit signs. I'm watching the shift changes. Because I'm out of here, man. This is a huge mistake. Now, if there's one of those three, I might stay. But there's none of it, right? And I got four guys that need treatment, right? And all of a sudden, I hear these guys talking about something. And I go, what are you guys talking about? They go, Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, what's Alcoholics Anonymous? And this is what got me to my very first meeting, Alcoholics Anonymous. It touched me dearly. They said, there's caffeine, there's sugar, and there's women. A van's going to pick us up and take us somewhere where I can escape, right? And I'm like, I'm in. right? This is great, right? And so we get in this van, come to pick us up, and I need to tell you, about 3 years before all this went down, my dad called my mom out of the blue to pay back all the back child support he owed, right? And as a good son, I went there to get my half of the money, which I had to pay back because of sponsorship, right? So I'm pissed off about that one, but I went there, I got my half of the money, I said hi to this guy for like 3 seconds, got me, his dad took my money and went and did what I did. Oh, he ended up in the abandoned house in the street. So I'm in this van and I pray to a God that Steve Lee says it the best. I treated God like I owed him money. I knew he was out there, I just didn't want to run into him, right? And that's my relationship with God, right? But I pray to him, God, please don't let me know anybody in AA. And if I do, please don't let me owe him any money. Nothing about staying sober, that was just my goal going to AA. We get to this AA meeting, it's about this size, and I walk in there, and there's caffeine, there's some sugar on the table, and there's a few ladies. And so I'm trying to figure out who I'm going to marry so that I can break out of this treatment center. And I see this guy standing in the back. I said, wow, that looks like my dad. And they go, you don't know who your dad is? I said, man, I've seen him one time in 29 years. They said, well, we got to go talk to him. I said, well, don't worry, let's not rush into anything. Well, they have a break in the meeting, right? So I walk up to this guy and said, hey, do you know who I am? He said, nope. I said, I think you're my dad. He said, Jason? And I met my dad at my very first meeting at Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And it was kind of a burning bush. You know, here's the damnedest thing. My grandma used to tell me, God either says yes, not right now, or I've got something better. God never says no, right? And I remember being a little kid, like in the, I don't know, when I went to live at my grandparents' house, probably second or third grade, I would come home every Friday after school, I'd get a duffel bag, and I'd sit on the front porch and wait for my mom or my dad to come pick me up to take me for the weekend. And they wouldn't come. And I remember sitting there I remember specifically the street light came on, so I had to come back inside. I came back inside. I went straight to the kitchen. I told my grandma I'm not going to your Sunday school anymore. She goes, why is that? I said, I've been sitting on that front porch all day. And all week I've been praying every morning, every night, dear Jesus, God, that my mom or dad would come pick me up. And I don't think you like me, so I'm not going to go because they never show up. And she just looked at me, and I could tell her heart was broken. She said, okay. I went in to my grandpa. I said, grandpa, come on, I'm going to Sunday school. And he started laughing. I said, you know, that was no, my last mom. But we laughed, and I said, you know what, grandpa, I don't want to sit on that front porch anymore. And he said, Jake, you don't have to sit on that front porch every day if you don't want to. And I made a decision right there. I don't need a mama or a dad, and I don't need a God. Right? Here I am 29 years later. I get out of that treatment center. I'm sitting on that damn front porch of my grandpa's, waiting for members of the Alcoholics Anonymous to come pick me up. Right? It's not like today where they call you and say, down the way. They start honking like 3 blocks away, right? And they want everybody to know we're saving the neighborhood. We're coming to get Jason and taking him to AA. Car pulls up and I run down there. You know who's there to pick me up? It's my dad. To take me to my meeting at Alcoholics Anonymous. God either says, yes, not right now, or I got something better. And the amazing thing is he took me to a meeting at Alcoholics Anonymous where I met this girl. I kissed her. She got pregnant. She got divorced, and we got married. That is not how you do a relationship, period, right? But we're still married today. But, you know, out of that relationship, I got a daughter, right? And all I have to do is trust the process, right? That's all I have to do is trust the process. You know, I got this lady, we got pregnant, we got a house, I got a job. Imagine that, I got a job that sobered up. And I'm doing pretty good, but I'm only going to one meeting a month, right? Because I don't want to rush into anything that might help. Right? So I'm going to one meeting a month, and it's a speaker's meeting like this. And it had a raffle, and the only reason I was going, I thought it was a raffle chair, and I was stealing half the money, which I had to pay back, right? And this guy, Tim Walsh, I had to pay back. He tells everybody, Jason stole our money, and now he's speaking here. I'm like, whoa. Wasn't going really good for me, right? And it was a Saturday at the meeting, and I didn't want to go. I just didn't want to go, right? And I told my wife I didn't want to go, and she's gotten this thing. So I got an argument with her, and I asked for a divorce. She said no. I didn't know you could just say no. I thought you had to get an attorney and, you know, look into this. Right? She goes, I'm going to the meeting. Maybe you should go. I said, no, I'm not going. I'm done with AA. She went to the meeting, and I went into my daughter's room. I got a big book and a Bible, and I wrote a resignation letter to Alcoholics Anonymous. Yeah, it sounds, in my head, it was a perfect idea back then, right? I found some quotes out of the Bible. I found some quotes out of the big book. I filled it in together, put some stuff in there. I dated it. I signed it. I took it to this guy named John B. John B., I thought, was the president of AA in Oregon because he had all these Nottigans. Right? You guys have, you call them sponsors, pigeons, or whatever you want to call them. I call them Nottigans. They're like the ones that you come, there's the greeters, and you like pull in the parking lot, and you're like, good God, not again, right? So there's like 10 of them. They always want to shake your hand and hug you, right? Or they get called on in the media. They talk about God, sponsorship, the allergies of the body, their sponsors. But not again. Why would you call him? It's the same damn thing every time, every one of them, right? So I just called them all not again. And he had a bunch of them, right? So I just assumed he was the president of AA, and he was the chair of this meeting. So 500-600 people in this meeting, I walk up to him, I hand him my resignation letter, he opens it up, and he starts laughing, like really loud, right? And all the not-agains are coming around, they're swarming up, and they're passing my letter around, and they're laughing, and it, man, I'm sweating, right? And he says, no. I go, what do you mean, no? He goes, I'm not going to allow you to leave Alcoholics Anonymous. What accidentally came out of my mouth is, will you sponsor me? Shit, he quit laughing just like that, right? He goes, are you willing to go to anything for victory over alcohol? I'm like, man, I was just resigning from AA with a letter, right? Yes. He said, this is what you're going to do. He said, you're going to get on your knees in the morning, and you're going to get on your knees and say, please help, thank you, amen. And at night, you're going to get on your knees and just say thanks. And I said, should I say anything about my sobriety? Because you've got way more problems than sobriety. You just go with that, right? And I said, okay. He said, you're going to call me every morning at 6:30 in the morning. I said, I might as well get a better job. He told me I had to read 2 pages out of a big book for the rest of my sobriety. I had to go to 5 meetings a week. 2 where he was at. That's like almost a 6-month coin in 1 week, right? And you're like, good God, who does that, right? And then he told me I couldn't drink in between meetings. Damn, in like a month I was a noggin. Right? I'm standing at the front of the line of a greeter. My job is to hug every man that walks through that door and shake every woman's hand and tell them make sure they feel welcome. Damn it, dumbest. It was way unnecessary, but I did it. Right? And, you know, my life started getting better. Right? I became a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, but here's the problem. If there's anybody like me, at 9 years of sobriety, I knew what everybody was going to say. I knew what Lee was going to do. I knew whose birthday he was going to talk. You hear all the time just wah, 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 wah. You people just annoy the hell out of me, right? So I sat in the back and I started selling drugs. Like nobody in here has ever thought of selling dope sober, right? For God's sake, you're all saints in California. I started getting pretty good at it, right? And 9 years of sobriety, I did good at what I was doing. I bought a car. I took it to a place called Les Schwab. I don't know if they have Les Schwab in California. Put these wheels, tires on. I'm pulling out of this driveway, and the wheel falls off, and I crash, right? Les Schwab, man, that's our fault. Sorry about that. We'll rent you a car. And they rented me this Chrysler 300, a 2007. It looked like a Rolls Royce, kind of. It had tinted windows. It said Henny on the side. And I grew up filling these flats. I thought I had a ride, right? So I went and met this guy. I had to meet him every day for about a year. I'm driving down the road, and all of a sudden, a whole bunch of cops swarm my car. Right? And I don't mean like one or two. I mean like a task force, I guess. Well, I found out later it was a task force. Swarm my car, right? And I have 157 grams of meth. And I've only been in the car one time, so I don't know what to do with it, right? I have a valid driver's license, proof of insurance, and I haven't had a drink or drug in 9 years. I should probably be able to talk my way out of this, right? So I figure I'll just put it under the front seat, and maybe they won't see it. So I'm sitting there while they're doing whatever they're doing. And finally, an officer walks up and he taps on the window. I roll it down because I act like I didn't know they were there. And he said, Jason, which is another very bad sign, right? So he said, shut the car up and step up on the curb. I said, sure. So I shut the car up and I open up the door to get out and I hear, and I look down and the seat's going back all by itself. Right? And it's not like when you're a little kid playing cops and robbers where you yell time out. Right? They just kept rolling back, right? And I'm sitting there going, yeah, shit. That's what I was thinking, man. Not exactly what I was thinking, but there's some people here that are, yeah, that's what I was thinking, right? And the seat went all the way back to my dose in the middle of the floor, right? And you can't, like, reach down and push it under because everybody's got a gun but you, right? So I just shut the door and hope they didn't see it. They did. I got charged with commercial delivery, commercial possession, racketeering, intimidation of a federal witness with a gun charge. With 9 years of sobriety, standing on the side of the curb, going to meet the Alcoholics Anonymous, stealing the seat, judges, people trying to save my ass. You know, and it just got bad. My lowest point for me in that, you know, my wife divorced me, which I used to think was a bad call, but now that I'm sobered up, I thought that was a great call. But she has remarried, right? Which I think is a great call. AA in my area is like, that's a very bad decision, Julie, right? That's a whole other story. she divorced me, and I put a needle in my arm and started running again, right? Because I don't know how to deal with that guilt, that shame, that embarrassment, being on TV, all that happening. Just didn't know what to do. And I remember the lowest part for me was at the point where my ex-wife at the time, or Julie, my wife now, would let me come over and see my daughter. I had a six-year-old daughter at the time. And she let me come see my daughter if it looked like I'd done some stuff, or if I wasn't sorting bolts in the garage or something at her house, or mowing her yard when she didn't have a lawnmower. You know, whatever you do when you're not there, right? And this day she let me come in, and I was taking a shower. When I was coming out of the shower, I see my wife coming down the hallway, and when my daughter was born, we started saving those quarters when the state started getting on the back of them. We had like 2 or 3 small buckets of them. We had saved, and I seen her coming down the hall, and she has these empty buckets going, "You stole your daughter's money. Who steals a little kid's money?" Right? But what alcohol does for me, I can justify and rationalize that, right? She wouldn't have that money if I didn't put it in there. Right? That's what I'm thinking. But what happened was I could see my daughter tugging on my wife's pants saying, "Please don't make my daddy leave. I let him borrow." It just ate me up inside, right? It just ate me up inside. I went and did what I had to do, and I left that house, and I didn't go back. And I ended up getting sentenced to 48 months in prison. My first 3 weeks of prison were, when I finally made it to the prison part, my first 3 weeks were in the hole. If you ever get arrested in the state of Oregon, the jail sheriff's office has been running the jail system since the 1800s. They don't need your opinion. That'll save you some time right there, right? Well, I got put in the hole, and, you know, I had anxiety, I was detoxing, I was scared to death, and I couldn't get anything out of my head, man. It was just going bad. And I could hear John say, "Get on your knees." And I got on my knees, and I said, "Please help, thank you, amen." I got back up on that bunk, and if I got any kind of relief, I got back on my knees, and I said, "Thanks." And something happened in there, right? In that first week and a half, praying like that, I had that point where I admitted to my innermost self that I'm an alcoholic. I didn't have to tell any of you. I had to admit it right here for the very first time in my life. My life changed just like that. Right, at 3 months and 27 days, I got released because the judges in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous in my area saw something in me that I didn't. They got me suspended the sentence, and I had to serve my time in the community. And I've been an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous in good standing since that day. Well, I had moments. If you don't have a moment, then get out of AA because it's going to screw it up, right? And, you know, I got out and I became an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I haven't had a drink or drug since that. I came right to Friday, it's 11:30:07. So, yeah, I was sentenced to prison, and I'm grateful for that, right? You know, my relationship with my family, you know, my daughter's 23 right now. She's in grad school. She wants to be a Supreme Court judge. Yeah. That's a whole nother deal, but that, you know, she came to me, and I remember there's like, she's in grad school right now, but there's a sorority or whatever when they were in there, and they're trying to talk my daughter into running for president of the United States at Portland State, right? And so all I heard is she's running for president of the United States. So as I'm walking through the kitchen, I said, "Hey, can I have a cabinet position?" She said, "No." Just like, didn't even think about it, right? I said, "Well, what can I do in the White House?" She said, "You could be a greeter." "Hey, if my daughter makes an appearance to you, I'll be on the right side of the building. Feel free. I don't know how long I'll be a greeter, see Larry come fast, right?" But I remember at that same time, as they were talking, one of my daughter's friends said, "Well, isn't your dad's past going to hurt you?" And without even hesitating, my daughter looked at her and said, "My dad's past is my greatest asset." Right? That's the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've always been a fine example. I remember when my daughter was 17 years old, my wife came to me and she said, "Jason," I said, "Yes." She goes, "We're going on vacation." I said, "Sweet, where are we going?" She said, "Canada." I said, "I can't go to Canada." She said, "We know." Way they went, right? So I was dog sitting. I guess my wife said, "You can't dog sit your own dog." I was watching my dog, whatever. So it was just me and the dog at home, right, for 3 weeks. And they get back home, and my wife says to me, she says, "I need to talk to you." My daughter was straight to her room. I said, "All right, what's up?" She goes, "Look, I need to talk to you. You can't overreact." I said, "I won't overreact. What is it? Give it to me." She said, "When Bailey and I were in Canada, Bailey got a tattoo." I wasn't ready for that. Not even on my radar. I saw trance dance. I saw stripper pools. I saw Aerosmith videos. I lost it, right? My 17-year-old daughter got a trance dance. Somebody's going to prison. we're getting a divorce, I got to figure out how to get that tattoo off your back, right? And that's all I can think, man. I'm screaming at my wife. I was locked up. I have tats. That's nothing to judge. But when it's your 17-year-old daughter, somebody's going to just die, right? In this house. And I don't care who it is. Somebody's going down. And, man, I'm losing it. My wife is sitting there looking at me like I'm crazy. So I go upstairs and I tell my daughter. And I gave her everything I had. She just sat there and cried. So I go back downstairs and my wife says, "Our story's different." I told her I was going to go for a ride. She said, "You kicked me out of the house." You're the way I left, right? I'm no longer in the house. I did my part, but I do what every good AA does in a situation like this. I called an Al-Anon, right? Because this is Al-Anon I love and adore, and I guarantee she's gotten a tattoo removed. She's probably gotten an alcoholic thrown in jail, and she probably knows how to get divorced by one, right? So I called this Al-Anon who I love and adore, and I'm telling her this. What happened? That my wife took my daughter to Canada. She's 17-year-old. She got a tattoo. Somebody needs to go to prison. Blah, blah, blah. Look, if I tell me a problem, he's going to give me the solution before I'm even done explaining. That's how Alcoholics Anonymous works. Al-Anon, I think they think about what you're saying, and they listen to what you're saying, and they might even write it down, right? Because it took me like 2 miles. I'm like talking in a speakerphone. I'm not getting nothing from this lady, right? Silent. And I keep telling her the same problem over and over and over. Finally, she said, "You know what I just heard?" I said, "No. What'd you hear?" She said, "Man, you just told your daughter that anything she does is not going to be to your standards and that her quality of her life, you know, that anything she does, you don't know why. Man, she's done a lot of things that made me look bad. And I hate saying that's why I get expensive. That her body is my body. That I don't respect anything that she does. That she's, you know, she made me look bad, right? I'm just going to tell you that. It was like a lot of negative stuff, right?" And I'm like, "Man, I didn't need any of that." She goes, "I know." "What do I do?" She goes, "You got to go back and make it right." And I could hear her husband in the background going, "You better invite God to go with you." So I'm going, "Get down the road." And I'm here. I don't need no help from AA, for God's sake. I'm already in a problem, right? And I went back to my house, and I sat in that driveway for about 5-10 minutes, and I invited God to go in with me, right? I went in, I told my wife, "I think I overreacted." She said, "You did." Even my dogs weren't even looking at me. They're just like on the couch going, "You're done," right? So I go upstairs, my daughter's sitting there, she's crying, and then I tell her, "Man, I don't care what you do with your life. I'm an idiot. I apologize. I don't care what you do with your body. I don't care who you believe in. I don't care your political views. I don't care who you marry, who you love, what. I don't care. All you need to know is I love you no matter what. Right? And you are always welcome wherever I'm at." She goes, "I know, Dad." She goes, "We knew you were going to overreact, so then I became a victim again." You know, I was like, "Well, why didn't you text me or something?" She goes, "Would that make a difference?" "Well, not really. I would have probably been here with a gun by the time you guys were arrested." And she goes, "You want to see the tattoo?" I'm like, "Oh, shirt." And she lifts up her shirt, and on the side of her chest, she has an AA symbol that says "One Day at a Time." And there's a hand going like this, and a hand going like this. My first thought, don't worry, I didn't say anything, was, "Good God, I hope you're not an alcoholic, right?" It was an AA symbol. The second was, "What's with the praying hands? We're not Catholic, right?" But I didn't say anything. She goes, "You want to know what it means?" I said, "Sure." She said, "If it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous, you and Mom would have never met, and I wouldn't be here." She said, "The hand going like this is Mom's hand, because she's always serving the coffee and serving the cookies at the meet. And the hand like this is yours, Dad, because you're always welcome people to Alcoholics Anonymous and give them a hand up." So now I'm crying, right? This lady probably physical said that was God kicking me in the nuts. So I avoid her like the plague, right? That's just a typical day in my house, right? That's just how it is. But what I know today is if I participate in my life, I can make mistakes and I can still make it right. Right? That's why I have a 10-step. You know, I'll share one more story about my daughter and then I'll get on to it. You know, like I said, when my daughter was really young and I got out of jail, man, I wasn't a good father. Right? I was a screamer, a yeller, an intimidator. You know, and my daughter, her friends were like running around and yeah, it just wasn't working. Right? And one time I yelled at her daughter, my daughter and her friend Cody so bad they went and hid in a closet and called Cody's mom to come get him because they're afraid of me. Right? So my wife had to deal with that. So I go to the sponsorship meeting that we have, I don't know if they have them in California, but all the guys that we sponsor, we meet on Sundays once a month. You share about anything you want to, right? Anything you can't talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's usually about women, money, sex, porn, whatever it is. For me, that day was like, I don't know how to be a father. What do I do? I want to kill my kid. I want to kill any of you at any time. What do I do? And this guy, Larry, who I can't stand, says, I know what you do. great. Now I gotta take advice from Leonard. He goes, man, every time we go to an AA function, the first thing my kids ask is Jason gonna be there? The reason that is because every time you see my kids, you hug them. You make sure they're entertained, you make sure they're fed, you make sure they feel safe. So when you're having a problem with your daughter, why don't you try treating her like you're babysitting my kids? I said, that'll never work, so I started doing it, right? When my daughter was 13 years old, she's having a slumber party. It's like 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning. My wife wakes me up and says, I need to go tell them to be quiet. And I tell my wife I didn't invite them. And I was sleeping just fine, right? Kind of like snoring. My snore don't bother me. Well, that didn't go over real well. So I got up and I went in that room, opened up the door, and they're doing what kids do, bouncing around, yelling, and whatever. And I gave it to them again, right? I told them what I thought. I yelled at them. Took their phone, slammed them in the drawer, shut the light off, slammed that door, and I went back to my bed, and I could hear the guys in my group saying, that's how you don't treat anybody's kids. Right? That's the only example of some of those people might see as a father or a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I got back up, and my dog and I walked back in there, and I opened up the door, and I turned the light, and they're all staring at me, right? And I apologized. I said, man, I overreacted again. I said, what you guys need to do, you just need to turn the TV down, turn the lights down, quit giggling so loud, because you're making Julie really mad. Right? Here's a gift. I went to shut that door, and I hear my daughter's friend Cody say, I told you guys you'd come back and apologize. My daughter's friend said that. That's the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's taking directions that I didn't think would work or I didn't believe in. My life got better. You know, the amends with my grandparents, I got on the amends with my grandparents. Look, my grandpa was alive, my grandma's dead. Right? But I knew I owed him amends. So I go to my grandpa's house. I said, hey, Grandpa, I don't know if you know this or not, but I stole a lot of money from Grandma and you and borrowed a lot of money from Grandma and you. He goes, yeah, I know. I said, yeah, I don't know how much. He says, I do. I go, what? He goes to my grandma's bed and he comes out with these spiral notebooks from like 1978. Jason borrowed 25 cents. Jason Mosellon has 10 cents credit. Jason, every IOU, every contract, every dollar, I stole everything in these. That's not right. That's like the mob or something. Little church lady, what did she do with her life all day? Worry about what I was stealing and what I was doing with my money? I said, man, Grandpa, I can't pull that back. He goes, I know you can't. I go, what can I do to make it right? He says, you just keep doing that AA stuff and helping people. I said, great. So I'm looking at these books because it's kind of like the story of your life, right? I guess I had a freaking death problem when I was a kid because there's this one section in 1984 that says, Jason stole $5. Jason stole $5. Jason stole $5 for like a page. So I said, hey, how do you know I stole $5? He goes, well, every Thursday morning I put $5 in the coffee cup. Every Friday morning it was gone, and only you, Sam, and I live here. Who do you think stole it? I said, oh, that's pretty good. Yeah. I said, but if you knew I stole it, why didn't you do anything about it? He goes, I asked you many times, Jason, if you stole it. I said, yeah, but you knew what it was me. He said, this has changed my life. He said, Jason, stealing's not wrong until it's wrong to you. And I'd rather you steal from me than our neighbors or your friends. That's the guy I thought was out to get me. Right? That's the guy that I thought was out to get me. And so I left, and I got in my car, and I'm driving. I called John. He says, what do you got to pay back? I said, nothing. So I went back. And he told my family, hey, that's not going to fly. And so we found out that he wouldn't drink. He was never going to pay. Two things he was never paid for: bottled water or cable TV. He was screwed during the pandemic if he was alive. But so I said, hey, can I get you cable TV? He said, whatever. Right? I said, okay. So I got him cable TV. And about 3 weeks after he got it installed, he called me up one night and said, man, you got cable TV? I said, man, for everybody, that's cable TV besides you, right? And he had a phone line that went from the telephone pole to the back of his phone. He had no more outlets in the whole house, right? I had to have everything put in, but. He started talking about cable TV, and he talked about Pawn Stars. He talked about the History Channel. He talked about ESPN and how it's on all night. I mean, we just, like 20 minutes going over all the shows and all that. And he said, man, this is the coolest gift anybody's ever gotten. And I was making a mess. Right? I was trying to clean up my side of the street, and I got the benefit. You know, my grandma, on the other hand, man, she was dead. I don't know if anybody has a dead relative that looked out for you, but I didn't know how to deal with that, right? I wrote letters, I went to the gravesite, I looked for dragonflies, butterflies, ants, potato bugs, whatever, right? Grass blowing over to the right. I did everything you guys suggested. I did everything, and all those things, yeah, I got some relief, but I couldn't get rid of that ache. That ache inside of that guilt, that shame, and that embarrassment, right? One day I'm flying back up on a plane, and I obviously didn't have my phone on airplane mode because I got a text from this guy, Jimmy Jack, and look, I'm the kind of guy that if you give me a clear-cut direction, sometimes I don't get it right away, but if you tell me a story and I can feel it, I'm in. Right? And I remember he sent me the story, and it's about this little boy. He's the firstborn in his family. His sisters were born, and his dad started paying attention to his sisters, and he got jealous. But he knew his dad loved football, so he wouldn't ask his parents, hey, can I play football? And they signed him up, and right away he sucked at football, right? He's a trumpet player. But every practice and every game, his dad would come find him and give him a hug and tell me about him and how proud he was of him. And the kid just kept playing because he wanted that attention. Right? In his senior year, his team won the state championship, and a couple weeks before the big game, and the coach at our practice, and the coach calls him on his son, and he talked to him, and said, what's up? And he said, I don't know how to tell you this, but your dad had a heart attack today, and he didn't make it. The young man hit his knees and he started crying. He got up and he asked the coach, can I go home a little early today? The coach said, this is just a game. Go take care of your family. Don't worry about this. And the big game came and the kid didn't show up for like the third quarter, right? And then he runs out on the field, everybody cheers because they know what's going on. And his team's losing really bad and he asked the coach, can I play? And the coach is like, well, we're losing anyway, might as well go in. The kid intercepts the first ball and runs it back to the touchdown. The coach is like, what the heck? And he leaves him in there. The kid makes some tackles and he scores again. And the coach is just like, what the heck? And finally, he ends up winning the game for his team, right? And the coach is like, what the hell just happened? They carry the kid off on their shoulders. And, you know, that night, the coach is leaving the locker room. As he's leaving, he sees the kid sitting in the back by himself. And he walks up to him and says, man, take as long as you want. And he says, thanks, coach. And the coach says, hey, I need to ask you something. He goes, you're not the best athlete I've ever coached. Right? Actually, you're probably the worst. What happened out there tonight, man? He goes, that was one of the finest examples of football I've seen in a long time. What got into you? The young man said, coach, I don't know if you know this or not, but after every single game, even the games I sat on the bench and you didn't play any of them, the games I lost because I dropped the ball, every single game my dad would come up and tell me, he'd give me a hug and tell me he loved me and how proud he was of me. After every single thing, no matter what. And the coach said, you had a great dad. And as the coach turned away, the young man said, coach, I don't know if you know this or not, but my dad was blind. And tonight's the first night he ever really got to see me play. Just like that. Just like that, I got released. Right, because I know every time I walk into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I say, my name is Jason Johnson, I'm an alcoholic. Or I see a new person that's in here, it's got 7 days, and I walk up to him and say, man, if I sit beside you, maybe get you a cup of coffee. My grandma used to see that. She's had a front row seat to everything I've done. Everything that I have is of value or any good is a result of you guys. And I'm just paying that debt. You know, I know that when I die, I'm going to go to that big meeting in the sky. That's the first place I'm going to go because I want to make sure there's a Bill and a Bob and a Jesus. Right? And if they're not there, I'll let you guys know if I die before you, right? But I know who's going to be in the parking lot waiting for me to get rid of me, my grandparents, right? Because they'll want to see me. And I know what happens. My grandparents, if you're not an hour early, you're always late, right? And I know what he's going to do. I'm going to get there and tell you, thinking I'm going to die, right? So it's not like it's on God. He'll probably wave at me because he doesn't know where I think I know where I'm going or anything like that. But here's the deal. For the first time in my life, because I've been hugging men in Alcoholics Anonymous when it wasn't convenient or necessary and very awkward. I'm going to be able to hug my grandpa for the very first time and tell him I love him and thank him for giving me a safe place to live. My grandma, on the other hand, she's probably dancing and praising Jesus and thanking God and told him, my grandpa, I told you so. And I know what she's going to do. She'll hug me, tell me she loves me, she's proud of me. Here's what it is. For the first time in my life as a sober member, I'm going to be able to look my grandma in the eyes and say, grandma, it's the damnedest thing. These people in this program called Alcoholics Anonymous, they found a solution to their problem, and they introduced it to me. But most importantly, again, some of those people showed me some grace. And in doing that, they introduced me to that kid inside of you that only you believed existed. That might not be a big deal to you, but if you're a drunk who can't stop drinking, there's power over alcohol, it's a big deal. You know, right before the pandemic happened, I had this kid kept calling my phone, right? And finally we connected and he said, tell me his name. He says, you know, my teacher in my class has selected me to do an article on the drug addiction and alcoholism and the opiate addiction in the state of Oregon. And I'm supposed to interview a doctor, a pastor, a police officer, and a convicted felon. Oh, I'm not the doctor, right? So let's get that out of there. If anybody was thinking he was either doctor. He said, can I interview you? And I said, sure. And he shows up and he's with us. Look, he has an enthusiasm for life, probably. They're just trying to get a break out of class, right? So we sit down and this young man starts asking me all these questions. And You know, and I'm answering questions. And I can tell he's scared, he's nervous, because that's what we do here, right? And so I was able to ask him questions, and we're talking. And when we got done with this, getting to the end, yeah, I think he thought I was going to be like Al Capone or something like that, but I'm just white trash and stuff. He told me, so I was like, I don't know if I was a drug dealer he wanted, but, you know, at the end of it, he asked me a question. He said, what's the coolest thing about being clean and sober? And I gave him a gratitude list, right? I got God, I got my family back, I have this, I have that, I have this, and this, and this. And he's not writing anything down anymore, so it's kind of pissing me off, right? So I said, all right, buddy, what's the coolest thing about doing this for you? And he looked at me, and he thought about it for a few minutes, and he looked at me, and he got a big smile, and he goes, what's the coolest thing about this is? I said, yeah, what is it? And he goes, my teacher believed in me. And just like that, I got kicked in the nuts again, right? Because today, I didn't one time mention the guy who shook my hand when I walked into the door of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't mention the person that hugged me and told me, sit down, let's love you so we can love yourself. I didn't do that, right? It's all about what I've got, not what was given to me. Now, my family used to tell me I have to participate in my prayers. Because I saw stuff like, yeah, I prayed that I win the baseball game on Saturday. She shut me out the door and told me to go to practice, right? I prayed for a bicycle, she made me mow the lawn, right? And here's what I know today. Every morning I get on my knees and I say, my dear friend, if you see fit and be thy will, I sure appreciate it if I could stay in Alcoholics Anonymous another day. Thank you for allowing me to participate in my prayers. One more time. Thank you so much, Jason.